life and what I get to be a part of. There's a right-sizedness all of a sudden that hits me, that it's like Mickey is standing in Dayton, Ohio by invitation, and it's a long way from there to here. It's an awful long way, and I'm so grateful to be here, and I love you. Believe it. Believe it. I started, well, let me tell you this. You all like to qualify, and I'll do it my way, like I do everything else. And I start every talk the same way. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 weeks of sobriety. And I'm serious about that. I thought if I could just get 2 weeks where I didn't hurt like that, where I wasn't so sick, that I'd be very grateful to you. And I would go back out and start drinking again. Not because I wanted to drink, because when I came here, I was done. I wanted nothing that was in a bottle of alcohol anymore. But I had spent my life drinking, and I did not think it was conceivable that I could not drink alcohol. And what's our date today? 26, 27? On the 12th of this month, I celebrated 25 years without a drink in Alcoholics Anonymous. I drank from the time I was 4 years old till I was 27, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous too young to be an alcoholic. Too pretty to be an alcoholic. I had a London fog raincoat, sister, and I was looking good, you know what I'm saying? Can't be an alcoholic if you got a London fog raincoat. I can't remember, but maybe sometime in my second week, I met a young lady who was 14 years old sitting at these tables, and that blew that whole theory up right there. And I knew that I was in for a long road of learning. And that has continued. I want to thank Cindy and John and Chris. Did I miss somebody? Stephanie. For sharing from their hearts, it has made it impossible for me to get up here and give you my canned pitch. And I wanted to hide behind it. I'm just being honest with you, because this you sign up for this deal, and you're going to walk the road if God will continue to be in your life, and you'll let him. So I'm going to share. We're going to talk about it. But I spent my life like that, and what happens is... I do not do a long drunkalogue. I do want to qualify so that you have some confidence that I am an alcoholic. But it's hard for me to talk about it just about X number of drinks. I consumed X number of drinks and I am an alcoholic. It's not the way I can do it. I'll tell you what it was like. I was kicked out of every school I went to until I got to high school because I was a discipline problem. We alcoholics are an undisciplined lot. I was a discipline problem, and it wasn't, we are going to suspend you. It was, get thee hence, and we don't want to see you again. And the reason was, I was the last kid you wanted to see move into your neighborhood. I was really angry. And at the same time, I was a vandal. I was an altar boy. And I meant both of them. And I can't explain that. Maybe I don't have to in this room explain that I sought God all my life and I couldn't get to him. And what was on me hard. And it was on fire. And you know what I'm saying? And so... we went down this road 99 miles an hour with my hair on fire, and I wanted to stop the bus, and I could not stop the bus. And I had no idea what was wrong with me. And I was paying dues that were way too tall for what was going on in my life. I was too young to pay those dues. And I'm telling you, And I just got harder. I got harder. Because it was the only way I could survive. And it wasn't what you were doing to me. It was what I was doing. And the way I dealt with it was, if I was in a classroom and a teacher told me to do something, and I disagreed, I would stand up in the middle of the classroom and tell the teacher what I thought of him, which you may want to do once. You may not ever want to do it. God bless you. But if you do it repeatedly, you will go where I went, and you go out the door. So what I did was this. I looked for people who were like me. If you drank and you blew church off and you didn't do your homework, you and I were going to be friends. If you did your homework and went to church and you lived a straight life, I had nothing to say to you. I did not want to be around you. So I congregated only with people who were like me, who were really in trouble. I mean really in trouble. My best friend did time in Kansas City for killing 3 people with a lead pipe. I tell you, it's overwhelming. You cannot get here from there. And it's not like I was the worst person that ever came on the face of the earth, but I will tell you, it was bad enough. And so what happened was I wasn't stupid. I could pull good grades, and I actually found a shoebox that my mother had kept that had some report cards from when I was a little boy in it. And there was a lot of A's and B's on those report cards. But you see, my spirit would not let me sit in the classroom. So if you think I came to talk to you today only about drinking, I want to tell you that you are wrong. I came to talk to you about alcoholism. And I made a discovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholism does not live in a bottle of alcohol. Alcoholism lives in a human. And there are characteristics of this disease that I've had all my life and I've paid dues behind that only Alcoholics Anonymous understood, and thank God somebody understood it. Or I would have been condemned to death behind this disease, and I'd have died in ignorance because I did not know I had it. Because you know what an alcoholic is, don't you? An alcoholic is a person about this tall. Male, never female, only male. Who wears an overcoat all the way down to the ground. Stuffed with newspapers so that they won't freeze to death on a park bench. And I forgot to throw in somewhere around 78 years old. That's an alcoholic. We know that's an alcoholic, right? 2% of the alcoholic population is on the skids. 2%. That means 98% are out in our homes. But that's the alcoholic. We can target that. So when I was growing up and I'm throwing up and I'm getting kicked out of things and I'm in trouble and I'm running around and doing all this stuff, that's the alcoholic. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? So I spent my life going like that. And I grew up in a home that was like growing up in World War III. I can remember going into my parents' bedroom when I was 12 years old and seeing my father strangling my mother on her knees and she's screaming at me to call the police. I didn't realize when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous why I could not fall asleep. I have to make a decision at night to go to sleep still. And I didn't understand it. And I finally remembered or got that when I was a kid, if I fell asleep, I would wake up and it would be hell going on. There would be so much violence in my home, I couldn't stand it. My big brother used to have to come in and hold me. And he would hold me on my bed because I was terrified with what was going on in the next room. And of course, you know what I grew up to act like. I grew up to be that violent man when it was against my instincts. It was against everything in me to be that kind of a man. So, But of course, we know that what happens in our homes is not the cause of this disease. I believe, now, I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope, but you're also going to get my opinion in a couple of my theories. Because it's my hour. And you invited me here. I presume you heard a tape, so here we go. I believe that I was born alcoholic. Because I've never found anybody who can tell me how you catch this disease. You cannot drink enough alcohol in the world to catch alcoholism. It's not in the bottle. There's nothing. I'm addicted to a non-addictive substance. 9 out of 10 people, or 8 out of 10, you pick the statistic, can safely, more or less, drink what I am addicted to. The addiction is in me. Man, this conference has been a heart stopper or a heart filler, and you'll have to forgive me. I'm just going to kind of wander around in here for a second. We'll get on track. I hope. So what happens is this. I believe that I was born alcoholic and I was just waiting to be wet down, and I didn't obviously have to wait very long. And I don't know if you've ever heard in your groups that you stop growing emotionally when you start drinking. And I'm telling you, when I got sober, my daughter was 3 years old, and we'd get into an argument and she'd win. I had a lot of growing up to do. So for me, Alcoholics Anonymous was like remedial life. I mean, I went over to talk to some of you know Don P., and he was my sponsor, and I would go over to Don's house because I couldn't work and I was all screwed up, and like he would send his wife over in a car to get me and take me over to his house, and I would sit in his bathroom as Don was getting ready for the day, and I would learn about Alcoholics Anonymous and how to blow dry my hair. And I didn't know anything about women. I had no sisters. The only woman that had ever been in my life was my mother. And then I was married, and I had this full-time female on my hands, and I didn't know what to do. I did not know how to be married, and I didn't know. I was just not doing a bang-up job. And the ladies in Alcoholics Anonymous taught me about what a woman is and what marriage is and how to do this thing. It's a tremendous gift to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a tremendous gift. So what happens is I just drank and it got progressively worse. They told me that alcoholism was like an elevator going down. I could get off on any floor I wanted to, but it would always go down. And I had the kind of involvement with alcohol that the Big Book talks about. It just got worse. Started out, I could drink very little, then I could drink a great deal, and by the end, I could drink very little and be very, very, very sick. And I was waking up, and my hands were all screwed up, and I asked the guy, what's wrong with my hands? And he says, it's the booze. And I thought, how can booze do this to your hands? I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything. And in the meanwhile, I had this great brain that was cooking. And a spirit that was really sour and very sick. And I got up to the 8th grade, and I was about to be kicked out of the 8th grade. Well, I didn't know that. I was elected class president. I had moved to Rapid City, South Dakota, and I was a new kid in town, and I was brand new, and the kids liked me so much they elected me class president. Can you believe it? And the nun who was our teacher impeached me. Which I did not think was due process. And I had grown up, I grew up in Europe not all that long after World War II. And I can remember going into the flea market in Paris when I was a boy. And as far as, I mean, like from that door across this hall, on racks looked like the garment district in New York City. there were Nazi uniforms as far as you could see, because obviously they weren't in fashion. And these soldiers dumped them, and they picked them all up, and they sold them. You know, it was just like war surplus stuff. And I had grown up with that, and I had a collection of all this stuff that I had grown up with. And it was show and tell in the eighth grade in a Catholic elementary school. And I wanted to bring my stuff for show and tell. And they weren't having any of that. And so one Saturday night, I went out and I got a, you know, the nurses had those Johnson shoe polish, you know, liquid shoe polish, white shoe polish for their shoes with a little dauber on the end. And I got hold of that puppy and I put swastikas this big in all the windows of the Catholic grade school that I attended on a Saturday night. And come Monday morning, I showed up, and my friend Dan, who was my partner in crime, was called out into the hall by the principal. And I sat there, and I thought, well, by God, this is it, you know. So I got out in the hall. Dan didn't show back up. I got out in the hall, and I said I didn't do it. She hadn't said anything to me. I didn't do it. Unbeknownst to me, she had called Dan out in the hall asking why he'd been going home at lunch when he wasn't given permission. I said I was sick, not brilliant. I got out in that hall, and I said I didn't do it. She says, you didn't do what? I said, I didn't put swastikas all over. So I got kicked out of that school. And I stood across the street from my 8th grade graduation in a vinyl motorcycle jacket with a grain belt beer and a cigarette and watched my class graduate from the 8th grade, and to hell with them. To hell with them. This is the way I dealt with it. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I'm living completely sideways, and the only way I could do it was to say, what's wrong with you? And I got tunneled in pretty good behind that. And that's the way I live my life. I did manage to get through high school with help. And I my senior English teacher was this, again, I went all the way through Catholic schools, and this nun, and she had watched me coming for 4 years. And before school started in my senior year, she pulled me into the classroom and she said, Mickey, I just wanted to talk with you before school starts. She wanted to head me off at the pass. And she asked me a question that really stopped me. And she said, what do other people think of you? Not what do you think of them, but what do other people think of you? And it was the first time anybody had ever asked me to be objective. And I had no answer. But I was fascinated by this woman who could ask me a question like that. And she really loved me and she stayed with me for a whole year, and she helped me graduate from high school. And I got a chance about 4 years ago. I found her, and I went and sat across the desk from her, and I told her I loved her, and I thanked her for being one of the most important people in my life. I learned through some very important people dying in my life that if you love them, you tell them. And if you've got to thank you, you say it, and don't wait. Anyway, I did this whole thing, and I rocked and rolled, and I got on up, and I got out of college, and I got thrown in jail when I was in college. I was a nightmare in some cases. All the time, I got this love of God that's cooking in my heart, and I'm not kidding. That's just cooking in my heart, and I can't get past the disease of alcoholism, which I don't know I have. And I got out of college, and I got married. And I was going to be a singer, and I was going to be a folk singer, you know. And it was that time for that. And I went out, and I was going to have me a woman in every town. I was going to tour around and do all this folk singer. And the first night I went to sing, they told me at the club that I sang with a partner that if we were hired to sing, we were going to sing whether there was any audience or not. And so we got up on stage and we're singing, and the only person I have as an audience is the hostess from the bar across the hall. And she came in and sat down, total stranger, and we sang to her and I sang to her, and 3 months later I married her. Woman in every town. And we had a muffin in the oven. And I am still married to that lady today. And it's we just celebrated 28 years of marriage together. And I'm real grateful. I just love her, and I can't wait to get home and be with her. She is... Don't ever get me in this slot again. Make me number one. I can do a dry eye, but I'm not getting through this deal. She's the best place on earth to me, and I can't wait to get back to her. These are the gifts, but they're not easily won nor easily possessed. There was some territory that we had to go through. Please forgive me. I don't mean to be this scatter-minded, but I'm just full. There's been a lot that has happened, and but to sit in this room today, this is a unique conference because there it's so much in one day. In any event, we got married, and my alcoholism progressed, and what happened was I finally called Alcoholics Anonymous one night, and I want to tell you this story. I went a week without a drink, and then my last drink was just a beer, and I went another week without a drink, and I knew I could not stay sober alone. I could not do it without help. So I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't know anything about AA, anything. I had seen the movie The Days of Wine and Roses when it came out, and they told me that AA is in the movie. I don't know. I don't remember that part, but I can tell you who drank what, where, and, you know. That. Anyway, so I called Alcoholics Anonymous. I called the York Street Club in Denver at 10 o'clock one night. Marie was not there. My wife was not there. She was out at a class she had, and I had our daughter Amy, and she was in bed. And I called the AA club, and I said, do you have any meetings I can come to? Can you tell me about that? And he said, what's your problem? And I said, I'm an alcoholic. And he said, congratulations. And I just tell this guy I'm a moral leper. And he tells me, congratulations. I said, this is going to be a strange trip. And he said, can you come down here to talk to us? I said, no, I can't. I'm with my daughter. And he said, would you like somebody to come and talk with you? And I said, sure. And so Marie's gone. I got the daughter upstairs asleep. It's 10 o'clock at night. And I started scurrying around that house, picking stuff up and making it look, you know, I didn't want to think I was drunk or anything, you know. And then I got really scared, like, you know, what are the neighbors going to think? Like, these guys are going to show up on the front porch with a big A on their shirts, you know. And so they came over. And just before they got there, Marie came home. And I said, I've called Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're coming over to talk to me. And she said, well, should I stay? And I said, I don't know. We'll ask them. You know, they don't exactly give you a blueprint for your own 12-step. So I said, we'll ask them. And so they rang the doorbell. They came into our home. I said, you know, this is my wife. I said, she's not alcoholic. Can she stay? And the guy looks at her and he says, can you be honest? And she said, yes, and I vouched for her, you know. And he looked at my wife and he says, the first thing I want you to know is you are just as sick as he is. And the 12th step proceeded from there. And I was told about a disease called alcoholism. And I thought inside myself, you know, from where I've been and what's happened to me, this sounds like a step up. Alcoholism sounded like a step up. I hope, God, that I have alcoholism because he told me you could get well from it. And I'll guarantee you, you can't get well from what I have. I started showing up in the mental health clinics and they'd give me the 75-cent word with what was going on with me. And why don't you take a few of these, you know what I'm saying? And we'll see you next week kind of a deal. And I was dying. I was dying, and I did not know what was wrong with me. I have to tell you one quick aside. I was sitting in the psychologist's office in the Denver General Health Hospital Health System. It was for those people who could not afford health care, and I could not afford it, so I could go in there. And I was with this lady for a few weeks, and finally I asked her, I said, well, how am I doing? And she looked, now we never talked about my drinking, never talked about my drinking. And she looked at me and she says, you know, Mickey, she says, you are the most negative human being I have ever met in my life. She says, I don't see how it's possible for you to even walk around out there. Whoops, time is up. We'll see you next week. And now you got to go and stay alive on that for a week, you know. Alcoholism is a step up. I got a lot I want to say, so anyway, I'll just tell you about the next morning, and then I've got some other things I want to talk about. But in any event, I went to see my boss the next morning. I was about to be fired. I've been in advertising a long time, almost 30 years. And I was working for my first national advertising agency, and I went to have breakfast with my boss the next morning, and I was going to tell him, you know, because I was going to be fired. There's no question about it. And so we're having breakfast, and I'm sitting down, and I said, Bill, I found out what's wrong with me. I said, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to my first AA meeting today. And he looked at me, and he didn't say a word, and he got up, and he left the table. And I thought I was on the way. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're getting there now, because we found the truth, and it's going to be all up from here. And he was a telephone freak, and I didn't realize how deep that went. And he picked that moment in history to have to make a phone call. I want to talk about, this is a comment about on when you decide to turn your life around, no matter where you are, no matter what circumstances you're in, is God in your corner? Bill came back, he sat down at the table, and he looked at me without a word, and he reached into his breast pocket here, and he pulled out the 24-hour-a-day book. He was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did not know it. And that was my first thing that I did officially out of that living room of mine. And God already put his arm around me and said, we're going this way. I never have found it necessary to go back and take another drink of alcohol. And I found out in here, as I alluded to earlier, that alcoholism, it would be such a temptation to say, you know what, that alcoholism is in the bottle. And that demon rum is what's going to make you crazy. And if you just stop drinking that stuff, you're going to come out of that sucker and you're going to be nailed down right. And everything's going to be wonderful. And that was not my experience. When I put that bottle of alcohol down, I ran into Mickey, the alcoholic. And I tell you, I sat in meetings for about a year and a half, and I listened to how much you drank, and I tried not to tell you how much I drank, because, you know, when you first come in here, it's hard to get a whole fix on that. I did not know how much I drank. I thought my life was semi-normal, so I don't know what is an alcoholic. But I was crazy. I was cheating on my wife. I was so angry that nobody wanted to work with me in my company. I was violating my moral principles. I was insane. And I did not know what was wrong with me, because we're going to talk about drinking. And it is appropriate to talk about drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. But you see, I'm not drinking. Now what's wrong with me? What anonymous do I go to come in for a landing? And I picked this sponsor. His name was George, and I picked him because he was this little dude with a burr haircut, and I thought I could steamroller him. And you see, watch out. Watch out, because God's doing the picking. It was, I got sober in 1974. Vietnam War ended in 1975. I picked my sponsor, George, and he had just come back from three tours in Vietnam as a Marine medic. This son of a gun. Pow! He was tough, man. And I mean, here we went. And I'll tell you my cheese sandwich story, and then I'd really want to move on. I was working with George, and I'm doing this thing, and I'm cheating on my wife, and I'm nuts, and I'm showing up at meetings, and I'm really sad, and I'm unhappy, and I am extremely suicidal. And I've got a loaded gun in my top drawer of my dresser, and I got this plan, and don't we all have one? And the plan is to get to the gun before I get to the bottle. Because I did not want to drink anymore, but I just did not know if it was possible to not drink. And I thought, if this stays this way, I cannot bear it. I cannot bear being dry without some peace. So I go over to see George one afternoon for lunch, and I'm brown bagging, and I sit down in his living room, and I'm talking to him about my life the way it is, and I'm not telling him anything new. And George stopped me and he said, you know, Mickey, when I got where you are, he says, I got down on my knees and I asked God from the bottom of my heart for help. And he stood up and he said, you can use my apartment. And he left. Now I'm in George's apartment. George said he got on his knees, so I got on my knees. I got down there and found out I had no God. I didn't know a thing about God. I didn't have anything. The only prayer I could come up with is, will somebody please help me? I got back up off my knees and I went to work and I got into my office that afternoon and I did not, man, I wanted to die so bad I could taste it. And I called George on the phone and I said, George, I have a question to ask you. You know, you got to put your radar up when somebody you're sponsoring puts it like that. I said, George, I have a question to ask you. And he said, what is it? I said, do I act the way I act and live the way I live because I'm alcoholic? And he said, yes. And I said, can I recover from the way I live? And he said, yes. Man, now we got a new ball game. I couldn't believe it. It says in the family afterwards that father with his, like a gaunt prospector with his belt drawn in over his last ounce of food, his pick strikes gold. My pick struck gold. I've been living with this thing all my life, driving me down the road, crazy as a March hare. And he just told me it has a name. I'm not an alcoholic and crazy. I'm an alcoholic. And I can get well. And I grabbed everybody I could get my hands on in Alcoholics Anonymous and I said, this is a disease and we can get well. I'm telling you, I grabbed everybody. They all knew it. Didn't matter. Did not matter. I grabbed them and I'll tell you, my friend, Mary came out of the York Street Club where we went to meetings, and she came down the steps, and I'm talking with her all the way down the steps. She walked down a few blocks to get on a bus to go to work downtown. I walked down with her, telling her this story. Got on the bus with her, rode all the way downtown, and I had nothing to do downtown. I just wanted to make sure that people understood that this is a disease, and you can get well from it. Best news I ever got in my life. And I told George, I said, you know, George, if God spares my life, I am never going to shut up about the second half of the first step as long as he will allow me to draw breath. Because it's not the bottle that's going to get me drunk. It's not the bottle that's going to get me drunk. It is my mind. And there's no governor for it except a higher power. I cannot drive my car sanely without praying first. Do you have that problem? You see, I can't be married to my wife without praying. I cannot do any work without praying and working the rest of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am powerless. And my life is indeed unmanageable. Let me tell you something. If you're going to dry me out, you better help me out. Because you leave me with this, and we stop way short of the mark. I flunked everything in my life. I flunked everything in my life. I flunked church and family and school and friendship and money management and I thought I was going to flunk this. And I made another discovery. You don't have to be special to have success in life and in Alcoholics Anonymous. You just have to be a garden variety drunk or love somebody or be involved with somebody who is and be willing to work. I thought that the only people who won in life were special, that they were gifted. And I got to find out in here, all you got to do is try to live what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I need to tell you this. I work it like a revolving door. 1 through 12, 1 through 12, 1 through 12, 1 through 12. I'm not going to try to stay alive on last year's fourth step, on last quarter's third step decision. You're free to disagree with me. But it's what I need to do to stay alive is to work my program today. I've heard people say that to be a member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous, you have to share the message, carry the message. And I agree with that. But I think to really be a member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous, you need to work your program. Because what have I got to share if I'm not working this and living it? Then I'm out there trying to teach what I'm not willing to learn. Have I ever had my life conducted like that? This is serious business. I don't know that I need to take myself so seriously, but this is serious business. This really is life and death. And I'm honored to be invited into people's lives. And let me tell you something. Your alcoholism does not scare me. I am not afraid of your alcoholism. I am armed with the truth about myself to the extent that I have it. And I'm willing to walk with you in that trench. And I'm not afraid of you. And I'm not afraid of this disease. I've been afraid all my life. And the big book says, I can help where no one else can. We all can help where no one else can. I've seen alcoholics sit in front of me, invite me into their lives for just a minute, and I've watched them relax and sit there and get hope in their eyes because they find out that they're talking with somebody who knows about the disease of alcoholism. Not drinking. I'm not trying to dismiss the fact that the business end of this thing can get down to drinking, but it can kill you without a drink. And what do you die of? You die of alcoholism. It has encouraged me to get up, and we're going to do a little more sharing here in a minute. But 6 months sober, I watched the truth of that happen for the first time. There was a man named Ed, and Ed used to come around the York Street Club, and he had a vinyl hunting cap. You know what I'm talking about? Like the Elmer Fudd deal? And he had ear flaps and everything. I liked Ed, you know. And Ed was 5 years sober, 5 years dry. And Ed liked to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, smorgasbord style. You know what I mean? A little of this over here, take a couple of these, and go like down the road. But he had real problems with this 4 and 5 thing. Let's not do that. Let's not do that. So 6 months sober, Ed went home to his basement, threw a rope over a steam pipe, and hung himself. What did Ed die of? Ed died of alcoholism. Did he drink himself to death? No. This disease can kill me drunk or sober, and I need to know it, and I need to face that on a daily basis. I do not live my life or work my program from fear. But if you screw with the bull, you get the horns. I have a name for alcoholism. I call it the beast. And if you turn your back on the beast, it can swallow you whole, right down to your ankles so fast. Man told me, Mickey, tell me, do you have drunk dreams? I said, yes, I do. He said, tell me about one of your dreams. I said, well, I was sitting there at a bar drinking. And he said, really? You weren't sitting at a bar saying, should I have it? Should I not have it? Yes, no, no, we weren't doing that. I was already drinking. He said, son, you're going to bend down one day to tie your shoes and you're going to come up drunk. That's how much thought's going to go into your fall. So I got to work the program on Tuesday because the wind's going to blow on Thursday and I don't know it. So which day is it safe for me not to work my program? I have a daily disease. Have I done my work on my disease today? I feel like I travel a trillion miles to be with you. I'm so excited about this. I mean, somebody gives you your life back, you know, you think that'd be a little excitement in that. You're darn right. I've had a lot of adventures in here. My wish was to break the cycle of alcoholism in my family. I wanted to be there for my children, and so I worked at home. And I stayed home. And I stayed home so that my kids could see their dad, because my dad was always gone. And I got to raise my kids with my wife. Not perfectly. Not perfectly. Because alcoholism doesn't live in a bottle. It lives in me. And you know, we don't work our programs perfectly, so it visits us from day to day. And I've gone stark, raving, berserk, stone sober, repeatedly. And I'm not as crazy as I used to be. It does get progressively better. My mission was that when my children's head hit the pillow at night, that they could be assured reasonably, more or less, of 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep. This was my goal. I didn't want a Mercedes-Benz. I wanted my kids to be safe. And I wanted to be married to my wife. And I did not know how to do it. And God has provided that. Al-Anon has provided that. I used to get the mean streak in me when I would run out of things to do. And I'd just go in to pick a fight with my wife. And I'd sit down at the table and I'd start to wind it up, you know what I mean? Like that turbine engine, just getting rolling. And I'd look in her eyes and I'd say, don't you be taxed. Damn, it's too late. She's gone. No argument. It takes two people to argue. And she wouldn't play. And she saved our marriage one more day. That's a gift from Al-Anon. Thank you. And then there's Alateen, and two of our three kids went to Alateen. But our middle child, the son, was very, very shy, and Alateen helped him for the first time to begin to be social at all. And then there was preteen, and I have to tell, which I called Alatot, and it drove him nuts. And I would go, and I went over one time, and people say, well, why is there a preteen meeting? I mean, that's ridiculous. These are tiny kids. What's that about? So one time I was invited to come over to talk to a preteen meeting. Now, at that level, we're talking about sitting on rubber pads on the floor, you know what I'm talking about, and they passed out the cookies and the Kool-Aid, and we all sat down, and I tried to communicate to them what alcoholism was like, and I couldn't figure out how to tell them this little, you know. So I asked them to all stand up. And I said, I want you to start spinning around, please. So they all would spin around. And every time they sat down or fell down, I made them get up again and keep spinning. I said, that's alcoholism. And a little girl asked me, she says, when you drank, she says, did you throw things? And I said, well, no, not particularly. I don't think so. And she says, well, my mom, when she drinks, she doesn't throw things. She throws me. And why is there a preteen? And where is the rescue going to happen, you see? And it's essential. If you haven't gotten involved in preteen or alateen, it's a really decent and wonderful thing to do, and it's very, very necessary. I don't know what would have happened if somebody could have talked to me when I was getting burnt down as a kid and given me some hope. I don't know if it would have made any difference, but it would have been nice to hear. That's all I can say. My daughter is our oldest child, and she's married. And she married a man that I sponsored. And I used to sit with the people. I sometimes sit with the young men I sponsor, and if they're single, I say, you know, don't you wonder where the woman that God has for you is tonight? I didn't know she was upstairs. And she is, this is terrible. She's 4 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she is a lovely woman. And she started a big book workshop in Springfield, Illinois, where they live. And she's now sponsoring 4 women. And she's rocking and rolling in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you ask her questions, she'll tell you the truth. And during Christmas, we decided, we've got them living in Springfield, and we have my other my son and his wife and our new granddaughter are living in Buffalo, New York. And so in January, we got in our car and we drove 4,000 miles and we saw our kids and we showed the flag and we reminded them that by God, you do belong to a family and we're here. And it was a wonderful thing. And our youngest is a senior in college, Peter. And Peter was a little not quite sure about this old man, you know. He's kind of gotten to the place where we're not quite sure of this deal, and he's getting real independent. We asked Peter to go with us. Now, Peter's then trapped in a car with his parents for 4,000 miles. And when we got back, and I tried to learn some things, he says, Dad, you're always teaching me. You're always teaching me. So I tried to not teach him on this trip, make my amends. And we got back, and Peter said after the trip, he said, you know, I'd go on a trip with you guys in a hot heartbeat any time. What do you think that's worth? You know what I mean? What do you think that's worth? I've never talked about what I'm about to talk about. I've never done it from a podium, and I owe you the truth. We all do in Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. We owe each other the truth. So I'm going to try to talk about this for the first time. I've been in advertising for just about 30 years. And in the last 5 years, here's what I've lost. I lost my profession. I cannot find a job in advertising anywhere in the United States.
I lost my home. I had the house on the hill. I had the house of our dreams, and we lost it. I could not make a living, and I could not get unattached to the image of having that house on the hill and that profession. And we ended up practically homeless. Some friends took us in, and I lived on charity. It feels so safe to talk to you guys, because it is. And I got to a place about a year and a half ago that I was going to kill myself because I could not tolerate anymore what was happening to me. I could not believe that it was happening, and I could not get unstuck from it. And I sat one night on a floor of this place that I was officing for free, trying to have my own business, and it was going to be this 5 minutes that I was going to cut my wrists, or was it going to be the next 5 minutes? And I sat there all night, and I couldn't go home. And I just struggled that night. And God let me go to sleep. I couldn't stand it. It was cold outside, and I couldn't go out and be that cold. So I made it through the night, and I called somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous the next morning, and I got the help I needed. And I have been for the last year and a half learning how to live all over again. And I have a temporary clerical job. I make $10 an hour. And I'm so grateful. I can't type. And they're very tolerant. They let me be in this office. And I do data entry not very well. And I have me a job. And I don't know where we're going. But in this, the right-sizedness is happening, and no one has turned their back on me because I don't have the house on the hill. And I don't have health insurance, and I don't have any insurance. And I have these things happening in my life, and God is transforming me. The people in Alcoholics Anonymous, when it came time to get out of our house, came to our home. I'd heard these stories about how people will flock around you. I was willing to come to your house. I will help you out, by God. But to actually have somebody come and help me out, to have a group of people come into my home and help me get packed up and clean my garden so we could sell our home and pull up carpets so that we could get the floors looking like something. I did not know how to ask for help. Pride, selfishness. This is what the essence of our problem is. It says our liquor was but a symptom. It says it in the big book. Well, what's the problem if liquor's a symptom? The problem is I am self-centered and I try to be self-reliant and I don't pack the gear. I'm not equipped for that journey. I have sat over at my church and had the parish priest give me $350 so we could stay afloat. I thought I was going to be so ashamed to share this. And I can tell you that this is what this conference has been about. Is Mickey, you go in here and tell the truth. You share it with people. And so many times we hear stories from the podium. I hope I'm not just boring you to death. I need to get it out so you're stuck with it for a few more minutes, and then we're You hear stories and people say, and then I went through this, and then it's all over. Well, I'm right in the middle of it, and I don't know where we're going, but I can tell you that I sponsor a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and only one person dumped me. And I think he dumped me because I told him the truth too much. I don't think he dumped me because he was afraid of what was happening in my life. People have come around and stood with us like I cannot describe. Now, it takes two people to give. One to give and one to receive. And I have been on the receiving end now for just about 5 years as this process has gone along. Last week, my wife's company that she worked for folded. On Monday, I got to make my rent. See what I'm saying? And she had $1,200 worth of paycheck just get bounced. And it goes like this. And you sit in the middle and you go to bed at night and you say, God, We sure could use some money by Monday. But some of the terror that I went through resisting this trip, afraid of what would happen to me if, was infinitely more horrible than the reality that I'm living through. This is the weirdest talk I ever gave in my natural born life. I want to tell a quick Arbutus story because I love this lady that's been sitting here very, very much. She's been so kind to me, she and her husband Bill, for 24 years. And I asked her one day, long, long time ago in Ulysses, Kansas, I said, Arbutus, can you tell me something? I said, I don't understand why my wife has stayed with me. And she looked at me and she said, Mickey, I'm going to tell you the same thing I told Bill Wilson. You never will. In the process of things, this is a stupid story, but it's true. I've learned how to bake bread, and I make a really great Italian bread with my hands. And I'm in the process of learning how to bake pastry, and I have no idea why. And to be with my wife in our kitchen, baking bread and making pastry, and living together without our children, so we have the empty nest, and it's just she and I, has been a real gift, and it's been a real transition. I sponsor, as I said, a great many people, one of whom is going to pay my rent Monday. I'll pay him back as soon as I can. But he has the money, and I asked him for it. I said, they're going to ask me for it. Will you help me? And he said, yes. This is a family affair. The price of admission is work in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, or Al-Anon. No worky, no recovery. I mean, God will help you, but I got, you know, I guess that joke doesn't fit, but I'll tell it anyway. I really am going to shut up, I promise, a couple of minutes. This guy was out there, and he went out to see the farmer's field, you know, and he's standing there with the farmer, you know, and this is the minister, and minister's looking there, and he looks at this man's farm, and he says, what a mighty work the Lord has done here. What a mighty work the Lord has done here, as the minister looks over here. And this farmer is standing there listening to him, and after a while he says, you know, Reverend, he says, you should have seen the place when God had it all by himself. There's a cooperation factor here. God gave me the gift. He sprung me. Now I need to work and pedal as fast as I can every day to keep up with him. We are the luckiest people on earth. We are the richest people on earth. What we have been given is a lifetime of association with God in each other. If you have not stood up at a podium, anytime you can, please do. Because the love that I'm experiencing right now is worth the trip. I'm going to shut up in just a minute. I'm just trying to see if there's anything else I need to say before I sit down. Because I'm not going to get to be with you this hour again. My heart is full. I'm glad I got to travel with you. I bless you for having me here. Thank you so much for your hospitality. I love you.